Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here on this wonderful Wednesday. Let me give you the itinerary, the 411 on what we have planned for today's show. Over the course of the next 4 hours, I am going to give you one thought, 1 minute, on every team in the National Football League. So maybe you listen to this show and you are not a Chiefs fan and you're thinking, man, I wish Carrington would tell me what he thinks about the Carolina Panthers. I'll do that over the course of the next 4 hours. We are also going to be joined by the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. His interview got pushed to Wednesday. The Chiefs play on Monday, so their schedule was a little bit different this week than it usually is, but Patrick Mahomes will be on the show. He will be on the show coming up in about an hour and a half. We got a lot to get into. I think today is the final day of the baseball season. We'll see if the Dodgers can go ahead and win this thing in 5 games. They almost got the sweep yesterday, but the Yankees win game 4. There's one more game tonight in New York, and if game 6 or game 7 are necessary, they win Los Angeles, California. There is a lot to get into over the course of the next 4 hours. Again, we are appreciative of you tuning into the show today. All right, coming up, I think it is the midway point of the NFL season. It's kind of weird now. Back when it was 16 weeks, 16 games, I think we all knew where the midway point was. It's a little different, but we have just concluded week 8 of the NFL season. We are heading into week 9. So you know what? I am going to tell you what we have learned about the Chiefs so far through their first 7 games in the first 8 weeks of the season. But before I tell you that, I got to do this.
Pizza time on The Drive. Carrington, call me up right now. Call number 6, 913-586-7965. Call number 6 wins a pizza from our friends over at Pizza Tasio. Pizza Tasio is Kansas City's best New York style pizza, and they have taken over the town. They lovingly use 100% whole milk mozzarella, all organic tomato sauce, with locally grown fresh ingredients, all made by KC guys who both know and love pizza. They also have a killer selection of craft and local beers, plus unique wine. So, whether in the mood for a whole pie or just a slice or two, be sure to visit now pizzatasio.com. That's pizza, T-A-S-C-I-O.com.
All right, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend. I don't need you to tell two friends. Just tell one that if you want some of the best pizza in the city and you also believe that today is the end of the baseball season, the best place to talk about that is right here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, this is where I would like to start today's show. I wrote this down earlier today, and I'm happy to share it with you. We have concluded 7 games for the Kansas City Chiefs. We have just concluded week 8 of the NFL season. Let me tell you the 5 things that I think we have learned so far through the first half of the NFL season about your Kansas City Chiefs. Number one, their defense might be even better than it was a season ago. I thought last year that the Chiefs had the best defense in the National Football League. I thought that you could argue that last year the Chiefs had the best unit in the National Football League. So if you took all 32 offenses and all 32 defenses and you did a draft, I think you can argue that the Chiefs were the best last season defensively. I can give you a lot of numbers that would suggest that they are better now than they were even at the end of last season. And we saw that defense slow down the NFL MVP in Lamar Jackson. We saw this defense go on the road and help beat Josh Allen in the second round of the postseason. We also saw this defense eliminate George Kittle from the Super Bowl, also eliminate Deebo Samuel, and beat the San Francisco 49ers and all of their weapons. Did you know, if you took starting running backs in the National Football League so far against the Kansas City Chiefs in their first 7 games, and you added all of them up. So we're talking about some pretty good running backs here, right? Derrick Henry, who's probably going to be first team all pro. We're talking about Bijan Robinson, who's a fantastic back. J.K. Dobbins, who's really good. Alvin Kamara, who looks like he could be an all pro back this season. Jordan Mason from the San Francisco 49ers. They have played some top backs so far this year. If you add all of those running backs and their numbers together, it is 92 carries for 242 yards. Teams that have tried to run the football against Kansas City, they don't. Their last 3 weeks, Alvin Kamara, 11 carries for 26 yards. Jordan Mason, 14 carries for 58 yards. Alexander Mattison, 14 carries, 15 yards. You do not run the football against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, that might not have any value to Rob, but forcing teams to be one-dimensional is a major reason of how the Chiefs have become the best unit, the best defense in the National Football League. Their defense so far through the first 8 weeks of the season may be even better than their defense was last year, which leads me to the second thing that I think we've learned. We spent a lot of time debating on whether or not Chris Jones was worth the money. Now, I know that all of you are not going to walk to the front and say that I was not in favor of paying Chris Jones or I wanted the Chiefs to tag and trade him. No one is going to now admit that. But there was a lot of people who were on the fence 50-50 about giving Chris Jones the money. Hasn't he lived up to it? If you made a list right now of the top five, top 10 defensive players in the National Football League, Chris Jones' name is near the top of that list. He is on the same list with T.J. Watt. He is on the same list with Myles Garrett. He is on the same list with Aiden Hutchinson when he was healthy. Chris Jones is not just a good player in the league. He is also not just an elite player in the National Football League. He has become one of the absolute best players, regardless of position, in the National Football League. That is the level that he is on. That if you made who are the 22 best players at their position in the National Football League, Chris Jones is on that list. Starting. Not a backup on that list. He is on the list. He is the list. So the biggest things that I think we've learned is their defense is a little bit better, and Chris Jones is worth every penny that we were debating about. Every guaranteed dollar, the holdout was worth it, all of those things. Whatever Chris Jones told us that he believed his value was, he not only said it, he has lived up to it. He didn't just talk the talk. He has walked the walk so far through the first 8 weeks of the season. I believe right now he is their best player. And that's no disrespect to Patrick Mahomes and what he's accomplished in his career, Travis Kelce, Trent McDuffie. They have a lot of great players on their team. Chris Jones has played from start to finish at the highest level on this team, and I don't really think that it is an arguable point based on what we've seen so far through the first 8 weeks of the season. So those are my two biggest things. Let's get to number three here. Nothing's changed. Think about the division. Do you guys feel any different about Denver than you felt? Do you guys feel any different about the Raiders than you felt? How about the Chargers? We can even take this outside of the AFC West. Do you feel any different about Buffalo, Baltimore, Houston? Good teams within their own right. But no one thinks that any of the other teams are going to win the AFC West. And even though we have seen 7-8 weeks, we've seen these teams, we've seen the Chiefs match up against these teams, none of these teams have proven to me that they are on the Chiefs level yet. Maybe that will change between now and the final 8-9 weeks of the regular season and heading into the postseason. But we are in the exact same place now that we were 2 months ago. Denver's, Chargers, Raiders, probably going to select another quarterback. Buffalo's a good team, but you don't feel like they're on Kansas City's level. Baltimore is a good team. Don't feel like they're on Kansas City's level. Same thing with Houston around the National Football League. Nothing has changed. There's things that have changed for a lot of other teams. You feel very different about Washington, very different about Minnesota. There's a handful of teams that have changed. You don't really feel any different about the Chiefs. They were the best coming into the season, and fast forward 8 weeks, they're still the best. And I'm not really sure if that gap between the Chiefs and the other teams in the league has really closed that much either, even in the face of all of the injuries, which leads me to number four. This team has been the embodiment of next man up. There's no other team in the National Football League that if I told you you were going to lose your starting running back and you were going to replace that running back with the guy who was averaging 3.7 yards per carry, you were going to lose your number one and number two wide receiver, and you're going to win every game for the first 2 months of the season. You would have told me that I'm crazy. Baltimore wouldn't do that. Buffalo wouldn't do that. Detroit wouldn't do that. Whatever team that you think is good, there's no way that they could have handled the amount of injuries and attrition that the Chiefs have had and still maintain being undefeated. That is something that only the Chiefs would do. I would say over the last 30 years, there are only two teams that we think are even close to being capable of doing that. It's the Chiefs and the Patriots. That's not what the Colts could have done. That's not what Seattle could have done during their run. That's not what San Francisco. You pick any team that you think has been good over the last 25, 30 years. There are two teams that you think could deal with the amount of injuries and turnover that the Chiefs have been up to and able to stay the course the way that they have. It has been remarkable. It has been impressive to see the Chiefs continue to dominate this league in the face of all of the injuries that they have had over the course of the first 2 months of the season. And the last thing is, and maybe this is a negative thing, but I mean, I got to tell you what I learned. Their left tackle situation is a problem. We will find out how big of a problem it is as the games get more important. And maybe it is something that clears itself up with more reps, with more time. Wanye improves. Kingsley improves. But if I had to point to this roster right now, when I had to ask you, what do you think their weak link is? I don't think their weak link is wide receiver, even with the injuries. I don't think their weak link is corner with all the injuries that they have. Their weak link is left tackle. They are below average at left tackle. Now, you can manage it, and you can scheme around it, and there is room for growth and improvement. But we talk about on this show a lot how there are some March and April problems. That's what left tackle is. And this year, they thought that Kingsley was them spending a pretty significant asset to address a problem on their roster. It just created more of a problem. You can't say that the Chiefs haven't spent any resources at left tackle. They have. They spent two top 100 picks on trying to fix this problem. Neither of them are the answer or have been the solution so far. And their right tackle, they spent a lot of money. He is still committing penalties at a pretty remarkable pace. So those are the top five things that I've learned so far. I'm curious about you guys, 913-586-7965. That's where I am. This defense might be even better than they were a season ago. Chris Jones has been worth every penny so far. Nothing has changed in the NFL or the AFC. This team has embodied next man up, and their left tackle situation is a problem. I'll read you guys' text coming up. What have you learned through the first 8 weeks of the season about the Chiefs? Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. I was going through the list that these are the five things that I've learned about the Chiefs so far through the first 2 months of the NFL season. The defense might be even better than we thought it was going to be. Chris Jones is worth the money, the division, the league. Nothing's really changed so far. Next man up has been really the mantra for this season. The Chiefs have been by far and away the best of any team in the National Football League, and their left tackle position. Someone on the text line says, "CDOT, you're wrong about Juwan Taylor. He has played better, and he hasn't had a penalty in a couple of weeks." You're right. He has not had a penalty in 2 weeks. He is still third in the National Football League. He has 7 penalties. Wanye Morris has 4 penalties. That's by far and away the most on the team. He has given up 45 penalty yards, which is second in the National Football League. So you're right. A knock on wood. He has not committed a penalty the last week. He has 7 through their first 7 games. He has continued to be a problem on this team. Their tackles are an issue. The Chiefs, I would say, don't have too many issues that are not injury related. We talk about their wide receiver room, but it is a very cause and effect. Their wide receiver room is lacking because so many of their wide receivers are hurt. Rice is out. Juju is hurt. Hollywood Brown never played this season. Like, it is very understandable that they are having the wide receiver issues that they are having. When it comes to their offensive tackle, They've tried to address this. They have spent draft pick compensation on this. They have spent significant dollars on right tackle, and it has left a little bit to be desired. Someone on the text line asked, why were they not in on Cam Robinson? They were not in on Cam Robinson because of how much Cam Robinson costs. I think at this point, we kind of know what the Chiefs are and what they're not. I think we know what their budget is and what they're willing to spend money on. And Cam Robinson is not a player that they were willing to spend money on. Think about the trades that they've made, at least in season, over the course of the last couple of years. You usually get those players at a deal. I mean, Cam Robinson's cap hit this year was $17.7 million. And Jacksonville also is not willing to eat a substantial amount of money. If you're going to go trade for a starting left tackle, one who's 27 years old with the experience that Cam Robinson is, a team's also not doing you a solid and eating $3 million out of a $4 million deal. No, you think he's your starting left tackle, it's going to cost you a little bit. So you can give up less in draft pick compensation, sure, but you're going to eat a majority of this deal, or vice versa. Hey, we're happy to buy a little bit of this contract, but you're also going to have to give us a more significant pick. The Chiefs, I don't think, are in the business of doing that right now. Think about the deals that they have gotten over the course of the last couple of months. They're not willing to spend a lot. So if you're not willing to spend a lot, then you are not going to get a starting left tackle in the middle of the season, or really outside of the draft. You are not ever getting a great quality left tackle and really addressing that position. So once we see what Cam Robinson's cap hit was and the fact that Jacksonville was not willing to eat a whole lot of money, and that Minnesota, who thinks they have a legitimate shot, they are willing to pay $10 million the rest of the season for their left tackle, that should answer the question of why they were not in on Cam Robinson.
Also, I know we don't look at the Vikings this way, but because Sam Darnold is their starter, they have the rookie quarterback, which helps the cap significantly. Like, I know Chiefs fans, I talked to someone on the text line as they were leading up to the deadline, and we've talked on the air. The Chiefs are not cash strapped. They're not up against the cap. They're not like the Saints that are battling the cap every year. But they are not a team that has a plethora of cap space. You know who does? The Panthers. You know who does? The Vikings. The types of teams that have rookie quarterbacks tend to have more cap space just because that's the nature of the beast. So the Vikings, in a year they think, hey, we have a chance to be successful, can absorb more cap hit early and then get out on Robinson at the end of the year than the Chiefs can. Like, that's why they're in on Cam Robinson. They don't have the money to be in on Cam Robinson because they are paying other players, which is a good problem to have, but that's why at the deadline you don't get a starting left tackle.
Yeah, no, you're just not getting a starting left tackle. I also added this up, and like, it took me a long time to do it. I mean, between their left and right tackles so far this year, so if you add Wanye's penalties, you add Kingsley's penalties, and you add Juwan's penalties, they have 14 penalties that have directly come from two positions on the field. So that is just something that, in my opinion, there is not going to be a drastic fix for, at least in the season. And your best hope at improvement is just time and development, that you give Wanye with more reps, more opportunities, he continues to grow as a player. Or if you make the decision to go back to Kingsley Suamataia and now he is your starting left tackle, it is just going to be a learning curve. We're talking about with Wanye, we're still in the first 17 games of his NFL career in terms of on-the-field experience. Kingsley's obviously a rookie, so we're not close to where his 17 games are. You're pretty inexperienced right now at left tackle for the most part. I'd be willing to say, I haven't looked at every team in the National Football League, you are the most inexperienced of any of the contending teams at left tackle as well. That I think you kind of knew if the Chiefs were willing to roll the dice with a rookie left tackle the way that they were to kick off the season, or a guy in Wanye Morris who is a mid-round swing tackle, didn't start last year, there was going to be a little bit of a learning curve. We are in the middle of the learning curve, Rob, of what they have at left tackle.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a positive, if you want to view it that way, because the Chiefs are making it work because of their coaching staff is so good. Like, they are 7-0. Their pillars, their foundation, they are still very good considering their left tackle issues. If you want to be glass half empty, it does not matter who has started. Left tackle has been a problem. I know Wanye has been better than Kingsley, but it wasn't like Wanye was some Willie Rofe type, especially over the weekend in Vegas. You could argue one of the reasons the Chiefs were backed up to the goal line on that play we talked about on the show that led to the goal line stand is because Wanye couldn't stop grabbing people because he was getting smoked on the line of scrimmage. So they are in a good spot because I feel like the coaching staff understands the situation and they are winning in spite of it, similar to how we talked about with their turnover differential. But it is an absolute problem and one that you hope they can continue to adjust and course correct, because if it looks as bad as it did Sunday against better players, it's possible it could get burned by that bad left tackle play.
We see this happen all the time in the draft at other sports, and I think we see this happen at quarterback more than any other position in the National Football League. Are you drafting the player, or are you drafting the prospect and potential? Because those are two drastically different things. When you think to San Francisco and them going out to get Trey Lance, Trey Lance didn't have a lot of football experience, so you were not drafting a guy who dominated college football. You were drafting measurables. You were drafting what you project him to turn out to be. We obviously see how much that failed for San Francisco. And then when you think about it, they drafted someone who had a very good college career in Brock Purdy, and he was able to come in, implement your offense, and the Niners have never looked back. I think we knew going into when the Colts drafted Anthony Richardson to be their starting quarterback, Anthony Richardson didn't have a lot of football experience. He didn't start a whole lot of games while he was at Florida. So you were drafting the measurables. You remember, Rob, there was the big graphic where from a physical standpoint, he was basically Cam Newton. Height was same, weight was the same, all of the drills, exercises, he was physically Cam Newton. Well, we saw Cam Newton play college football at Florida, also at Auburn. We also saw Anthony Richardson play college football in the SEC. They were not the same player. So the Colts spent a top five pick a lot on potential and growth and development. He is not growing the way that they anticipated him growing into. They have now sat him down for Joe Flacco. Here's the latest with Adam Schefter.
Yeah, you know what the amazing part about this is this morning I got a call that this was happening. And I reached out to a couple of people to confirm, and I spoke to some people on other teams. And when I said, hey, my sense is that they're benching Anthony Richardson, the reaction I got from some very smart people was like, of course they're benching him. Like, it wasn't even an option.
Okay.
That, I mean, it was, I couldn't believe how strong people were. And so when I heard that, I'm like, okay, this is happening. This is happening. And, you know, you're waiting for confirmation. They met as an organization this morning to go over it. They obviously broke up those meetings. My understanding is that they have informed each quarterback. And now the move has been made. And it's a seismic move on a lot of levels because you're benching the former third overall pick who now becomes the second quarterback in that draft class to be benched, Bryce Young, number one overall pick, now Anthony Richardson.
The system failed Anthony Richardson. And I'm not even talking about the system solely of the Indianapolis Colts. Rob, this is not a trick question. How many pass attempts do you think that Anthony Richardson had while he was at Florida? He was there for 3 years. How many pass attempts do you think that he had while he was there? And I ask you that question because what we see happen is, and this is kind of what happens in the NBA, like so many of the things that we see in the NBA eventually happen in the NFL, that we have talked about this all the time in relation to certain college basketball players. Man, the more you stay in school and the more the scouts can pick apart your game and dissect your game, the worse it is for your NBA prowess. That inevitably, they are going to find things that they dislike about your game. So somebody like Quinn Ewers, for example, we have seen Quinn Ewers throw 900 passes in college football. That's at this point. We think Texas is going to the college football playoff. We think they got a chance to win the national championship. We might have 1,100 passes to dissect from Quinn Ewers. Anthony Richardson threw 390 passes in 3 years at the University of Florida. He had 24 touchdown passes in 3 years and 15 interceptions. Anthony Richardson was a below average college quarterback that a team, because quarterback is the most important position on the field, they then felt, well, we have to take these measurables. We have to take this big swing. We also have to play this quarterback early on in the process. The way that we are developing quarterbacks in the National Football League is broken. Sure, it's going to work for some guys. Jaden Daniels started a lot of college football games at multiple universities. He started at LSU. He started at Arizona State. We had a lot of time to see Jaden Daniels start in the National Football League. Caleb Williams, he was a three-year starter at a high level in college football. He started at Oklahoma. He started 2 years at USC. We saw a lot of Caleb Williams over 3 years of college football. Anthony Richardson, you probably, I'm not going to say probably, you definitely were not worthy of being a top five pick, but you smashed the combine. So you got picked in the top five. We got to take a chance because if we hit, think of the possibilities. He has a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. Well, this is the other side of it. He was never ready to play quarterback in the NFL. That was obvious. Now, Joe Flacco has his limitations, but Joe Flacco's also been doing this for a decade now. Joe Flacco was the quarterback during the New Orleans when the blackout happened, during the Beyonce concert. You know how long ago that was? He went against Colin Kaepernick in the Super Bowl. That's how. So it is not a surprise to anybody that Joe Flacco is better at playing quarterback in the NFL than Anthony Richardson. Look at the experience on one side and the inexperience on the other side. We are failing quarterbacks. It's not a shock to me that Trey Lance didn't work out. He throwed less than 500 passes at a 1AA school, and now he's a top five pick in the draft. Anthony Richardson threw less than 400 passes at Florida and was just okay in doing that. He completed less than 55% of his passes. He threw for 3,000 yards and 24 touchdown passes, and a team spent the third overall pick on that guy. I can only be so mad at the prospect where I got to be mad at the system that forces teams where they feel like they got to draft Anthony Richardson with the third overall pick, because that was always going to fail.
It is. You mentioned the NBA comparison. He got drafted on potential. Every year in May or June, excuse me, when the NBA draft is, me and you will talk a little bit of draft on the show. Hey, where do you think player X from a local school is going to get drafted? Late first round, early second. And the text line fills up with, how can you say that? He was productive at my local school. Oh, he's 22. Oh, okay, he's going to get drafted late. Well, this kid's going to get drafted in the lottery. He's 17 or he's 19. Yeah, he only scored 8.9 a game and came off the bench, but he's 19. Like, that's what they love. That's what happened to Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson was toolsy and young. He had to play earlier this season where there was the longest in-air throw of the year. He's toolsy. Even at Florida, I forget what game it was, but it was against Utah. Early in the season, he ran around and made a play that looked very Mahomes against the Niners-ish. But that wasn't the, you know, game-in, game-out product. That was a moment. But he was toolsy, and he was young. So it was the NBA comparison exactly as you made it. If you are toolsy and you are young, they're going to take a risk on you. It's one, and we fall victim to it, too. I make fun of Bo Nix all the time in the draft process because he's old. Brandon Whedon is an extreme example, but he was old. If you are young, you're basically new and out of the box. The NFL thinks I'm the first person to get to coach you. But sometimes box score stats matter a lot more than highlights. Not every time. There are definitely people who are toolsy and they put it together. But more times than not, what you see in college and not what you see on YouTube highlight clips is more the real.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point about Anthony Richardson and Bo Nix, I mean, I'm looking at the stats right here. Bo Nix threw 1,600 more passes in college football than Anthony Richardson. So it is not a surprise to me that Bo Nix appears to be a lot further ahead and ready for the National Football League. Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech, he threw 1,000 more passes in college football than Anthony Richardson. That stuff matters. We talk about this so much in basketball. Well, you know, you got to try to get to the NBA as fast as you can and you can develop there better. There's no simulation for game experience. There's none. And I get it. You want to get to the bag. You want to try to get to the pros as quick as you can and make the money. If you're not a two-year starter in college football, I don't know if I'm super interested in you starting on my NFL team. That stuff matters. There are very few examples in the National Football League that you just pop up out of nowhere. You have one good year of college football, and then you just go on to be a productive NFL starter. That's not how that works. We saw C.J. Stroud for 2 years. C.J. Stroud threw almost 900 passes at his time at Ohio State. Those are reps. That stuff matters. Football is unlike any of the other sports. There's only one way to get better at playing football. It's by playing football. It's not basketball. It's not baseball where you can simulate it and play in summer league or go overseas and do that. No, there's only two places to get better at playing football. College football, the NFL. And if you didn't play a lot at one of those levels, and now it's time for you to get better at the next level, I don't know how you progress. I don't know how you improve. I don't know how you get better in that situation. So here's the coach of the Indianapolis Colts. This is Shane Steichen, and here is him making the announcement that, yeah, Anthony Richardson, he's out of here.
All right, I'll start off just by, you know, confirming Joe will be our quarterback going forward. Tough decision, but one I felt was in the best interest of our football team. I feel that Joe gives us the best chance to win right now. With that being said, not giving up on Anthony by any means. Really not. He's a young player with a ton of talent. You know, and he'll use this time to continue to develop and grow as a professional.
Shane, do you have the final say who starts at quarterback?
Yes, I do.
This was your decision?
It was my decision, yes.
Can you explain maybe why you made it now versus
I'm just looking at where we're at as a football team, you know, sitting at 500 with a lot of football left, and just feel that, you know, Joe gives us the best chance going forward.
I actually would agree. I think that the Colts' best chance of turning their season around and making the postseason is with Joe Flacco this year. From when I've watched the Colts, Anthony Richardson, it is just so hit or miss. It's all over the map. It is far deeper than one decision to take yourself out of the ball game. He's just not accurate. He doesn't do a lot of the little things correctly. I just don't think he's not a consistent NFL starter. And now where the expectations are higher than they've ever been before and the turnover is faster than it's ever been before, if you're Shane Steichen, I don't know if you have the time to sit around and let Anthony Richardson develop. If you lose football games, that's it. They fire you, and you're back to being the offensive coordinator of a random NFL team. So you kind of got to do what you got to do. And if you got to sacrifice Anthony Richardson to do it, then I don't know what else to tell you. Coming up in a little bit, I'm going to give you one thought on every team in the National Football League. We will start coming up on the other side. But I want to tell you guys a story. A story about an underdog company that turned things around. This company was making $40 million a year in sales, which sounds pretty good, right? But people were kind of growing tired of their product. So you know what? They put their heads together and they came up with an idea. And their idea was gummy clusters. And did you know, Rob, that in 4 years, Nerds went from making $40 million a year to $500 million a year, and 95% of their sales are attached to the Nerd Gummy Clusters. I'm telling you this story today because Rob and I are usually on the same page. Rob is my brother. I love Rob dearly. He knows that. Rob came up to me today and said, "Hey, what do you think about those gummy clusters?" Like, I like them. They're good. They're tasty. They're the best new candy to hit the market in quite some time. Rob looked at me and said, overrated. Like, wait, what? Overrated. What are you talking about? They came in the game like LeBron in 03. A great prospect just came through like LeBron and Carmelo in 03, came into the league dominant from game one. Nah, overrated. I'm thinking about issuing a one-game suspension for Rob, too. We've already suspended Joshua Briscoe. We're already suspended him. He's out of here. He's done. He said the Kit Kat was the best chocolate candy on the market yesterday. I can't subject you guys to those kind of takes. Not on this show. There's only room for one terrible take person on this show, and I filled that quote up. I have enough bad takes for me and Joshua Briscoe. He's on a 1 week suspension. Rob, you called Nerd Gummy Clusters? They're overrated?
Overrated. Regular Nerds are better. Okay. Give me a little Nerd box. Two big gulps, gone. Crunchy and perfect. Little hint of grape flavor. What more can you ask for? Sugar rush? I don't need to be chewing on Nerds for an hour.
Text line 913-586-7965. I am thinking about, I don't know if we could suspend Rob for a full game. I'm down for a segment suspension. That's what I'm implementing right now. A one segment suspension for Rob Brenton, because it's getting out of control. It's getting flagrant. It's getting out of bounds. And ever since you got that promotion and they put a little new title on your desk, you've been walking around with your chest puffed out in a way that I don't like. And sometimes we have to be humbled. Maybe a one segment suspension will refocus you and give you renewed purpose and energy. You can come back and do better. Coming up on the other side, I'm going to give you guys one thought for every team in the NFL. We will tell you the first two divisions coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. My name is Carrington Harrison. We will play our conversation with Patrick Mahomes coming up in 30 minutes. In 30 minutes, you will hear the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, so this is what I would like to do. The Chiefs took care of business against the Raiders. They don't play until Monday. This is a little bit different week than we usually have. So what I want to take the time to do today is I want to give you exactly 1 minute on every team in the National Football League. Now, we're not going to do this all in one big bite. You know what? We're going to break it up piece by piece. So in this segment, we are going to go through the AFC South and also the NFC South. I will only have 1 minute to spend on each of these teams. Some of these teams, I don't think I'm going to need a minute. All right, Rob, let's start in the AFC.
Let's start at the bottom of the AFC South with the Tennessee Titans, who are 1-6, Carrington. Their upcoming matchups are the New England Patriots, Los Angeles Chargers, and the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, let's start with the Tennessee Titans. Is this season going different than anybody thought that it was going to go? Tennessee decided to put all of their eggs in the Will Levis basket. Now, they tried to put a lot of pieces and parts around him coming into the season, but he's not a good enough cook to deal with those ingredients. You gave him the run game. You gave him some great options in the wide receiver game. This is a team that is terrible. They've regressed over the course of the last couple of weeks. Tennessee is going to be a team that is looking for a new quarterback at the start of the season, and they are a team that just they played quarterback roulette, and they lost.
Don't need the whole minute on the Titans?
Not at all. I'm not here to waste my time or your time. Tennessee's not good. You know they're not good. They're terrible. They're not going anywhere. At this point, all they can do is play spoiler for Houston in the AFC South. Tennessee serves no other purpose. We will never watch Tennessee this year. I don't care where you live. I don't care what your favorite team is. Nobody wants to watch Tennessee.
Staying in the AFC South, third place in the AFC South, the Jaguars are 2-6. Their next three matchups are against the Eagles, Vikings, and Lions.
Have I not been telling you about Trevor Lawrence for the last 6 years? I've sat here right across from you and I've told you about Trevor Lawrence. They are broken at quarterback. Trevor Lawrence has been disappointing this season for the most part. This is a team that is going to have a hard reset at the end of the year. They are going to get a completely new coach, and they are probably going to need to invest a little bit more heavily in that offensive line than they have over the course of the last couple of years. I just didn't think that there was any reason to rush and go out and pay Trevor Lawrence. You could have waited a little bit. Sure, maybe you would have paid more, but you also would have got a little bit more information. Two things that have failed big time for them: that Christian Kirk contract is bad, also the Gabe Davis deal. They have just spent bad resources and they got a bad product.
Heading to third place in the AFC South, the aforementioned Indianapolis Colts, they sit 4-4. Their next three matchups include two nationally televised games, Sunday Night Football this weekend against the Minnesota Vikings, then the Buffalo Bills before they play at New York against the Jets on Sunday Night Football.
Well, I think I speak for everybody. I think we all want that game against the Jets to be flexed. I am not interested in watching the two oldest starting quarterbacks in the league on Sunday Night Football. Please, NBC, please, Roger Goodell, do what the right thing is. I think that Indy had to do this in order to save their season. I do not think that Indianapolis could have made the postseason with Anthony Richardson as their starting quarterback. I do think they can make it with Joe Flacco. They have been a better team with Joe Flacco as their starting quarterback. And when you are heading into this stretch, so as you mentioned, they have the Vikings, Bills, Jets, and the Detroit Lions. That's a difficult stretch there. I think you lose all four of those games with Richardson. I think you can go 2-2 with those with Joe Flacco as your quarterback. You come out 6-6 on the other side in an AFC that feels like it's weak in the wild card ranks. I think the Colts still have a chance of being a postseason team. I don't think they can win their division, but they are very much in the conversation of grabbing one of those wild card spots.
Carrington, the final team, the AFC South, the division leading Houston Texans. They sit at 6-2. Their next three matchups are Thursday Night Football against the aforementioned Jets, then Sunday Night Football against the Detroit Lions before playing on Monday Night Football against the Dallas Cowboys.
This Houston team has lived up to the expectation. I made the comparison at the very beginning of the year that they felt like this year's version of the Detroit Lions, and they have definitely lived up to that expectation. This is the Houston team that beat Chicago early in the year and also beat Buffalo earlier in the year, so they've got a couple of nice wins. Stroud has developed well. I got some questions about that offensive line, and the injuries are starting to pile up for them a little bit. You've lost Diggs for the remainder of the season. Nico Collins has dealt with an injury as well. He was maybe the best receiver in the league before his hamstring injury, and Tank Dell has really regressed this year. Can they get Nico Collins back healthy, and can they get Tank Dell playing at a high level again? If that's the case, Houston is dangerous. I think that Houston is a cut below the top teams in the AFC, but still very dangerous, still should be in the contender conversation.
All right, Carrington, let's pivot and head to the NFC South, which means we have to start with the Carolina Panthers. They sit at 1-7. Their next three games, they put the New Orleans Saints at home this weekend before heading to Munich to take on the Giants. We gave Munich Giants and Panthers And then they play the Kansas City Chiefs at home after that. Carrington, the Carolina Panthers.
This is what I don't get. We now want to give London the Super Bowl when we don't even give them good regular season games. Like, why don't we take baby steps here? Why don't we take baby steps and we give them good regular season games, and then maybe we can evolve to eventually giving them the Super Bowl? There's only one point to make about Carolina. Draft another quarterback. That's it. I won't take up too much more time.
You only wasted 10, 15 seconds on the Panthers.
Draft a new quarterback. That simple. I also would also maybe possibly suggest selling the team and getting a new owner. I don't think they're going to do that, but their ownership group seems like it's the biggest problem that they have. You can change quarterbacks. Kind of tough to change owners, especially when you haven't owned the team for 2 years.
Speeding up here, the New Orleans Saints are next. They are 2-6 in third place in the NFC South. Their next three games are against the aforementioned Panthers, then at home against the Falcons before facing the Cleveland Browns.
Are the Saints eventually going to rip the Band-Aid off? You know the Band-Aid that I'm talking about. The Saints have been trying to hold on and maybe be a playoff team and maybe win their division. They've got cap issues, and they also don't have a quarterback. The Saints just need to have a lean year and just start over. Eat some of that dead money, drop some of those players, trade Marshawn Lattimore, trade some of these other pieces, and eventually we talk about how the bill comes due with the salary cap. The Saints still don't want to pay their credit card off. Eventually, get your balance back to zero, get your account and money in order, and then move forward. The Saints have to do that. This is a lost year for them. They should be sellers at the deadline before next Tuesday's date, and they also need to, they've been trying to cut corners since Drew Brees retired. Go draft your quarterback.
Now on to third place in the NFC South, the Chiefs' opponent this upcoming week, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They are 4-4 and second in the NFC South. As I mentioned, they play the Chiefs on Monday night, then at home against the Niners before their last game in this three-game stretch is the New York Football Giants.
I think the question with Tampa Bay is, when are they going to get Mike Evans back? Because I think this is a team that is still pretty viable. Now, I know they're not getting Chris Godwin back, but could they be a team that's in the Darius Slayton conversation? Could they make a trade for him? Can they get Mike Evans back? I think you have a pretty good quarterback, but they've lost three of their last four games now. The injuries are really starting to pile up for them, and the schedule is not going to get any easier on the road against Kansas City, also against San Francisco. I still think they're in the conversation to be a wild card team, but the division conversation is closed for them. They lost both of their games against Atlanta. I don't think they can win the NFC South anymore, but can they grab one of those spots? It's way more competitive in the NFC wild card picture than I think we thought it was, but I think Tampa Bay is a good team if they can get back healthy.
Final team in the NFC South, the division-leading Atlanta Falcons. They sit at 5-3. Their next three games, home against the Cowboys at the New Orleans Saints before headed to Mile High Stadium.
I think Atlanta is one of the more difficult teams in the NFL to figure out. I think Atlanta is a contending team. I really like Atlanta's offense. I think they have two capable running backs. I like their offensive line. They got great weapons on the outside. Darnell Mooney was one of the better contracts in the National Football League this offseason. They've got three respectable losses. They lost to Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Seattle. You can live with those losses. All three of those losses were at home. But you can live with that if you're Atlanta. Atlanta is going to win that division. There's going to be a postseason team. Are they a team that's capable of going on the road and beating a San Francisco if they have to, or beating a Detroit? But I think you have to consider Atlanta to be one of the top three teams in the NFC. We'll continue to get to the top teams in the National Football League over the course of the show. Patrick Mahomes is coming up in 15 minutes. Keep it right here. So drive.